All right, and now our main speaker. I just want to say a little something. When I first went to OPC, started my journey of becoming an Alcoholics Anonymous, he was one of the first people that shook my hand and introduced himself. So with no further ado, Anthony, come on up.
Thank you all for coming out here. My name is Anthony, and I'm an alcoholic. Raul is awesome, coming out from surgery to come up here and do the deal, suit up and show up as we do. You know, it's very important. So I'm just going to tell you my story, and hopefully I get sober at some point and I can deliver some hope to people. I'm also a disabled veteran, and I have some severe anxiety stuff going on, right? So from the mental health standpoint, if I just survive this, I'm good. Right? If I don't run, if I can remain calm, that's a win for me. You know, my therapist tried to get me to sit at the mall for 45 minutes, and I wouldn't do it for years, not until Alcoholics Anonymous got a hold of me. They wouldn't get a hold of me till I was in my 30s. So I was born into chaos, it feels like. My mom made sure, and she told me she continued to smoke during her pregnancy with me and drink and use and all that, because she didn't want the same pains that she had when she had my brother. She had my brother when she was 15, and he was huge, right? She had me when she was 18, and I was thin. I came out just like this, basically, and I haven't gotten any bigger. Every now and then, I feel like I had my legs just swept out from under me from the beginning of this. There's a resentment right there, and that's one of the other things about doing this that is so cathartic, so healing. It's like a really intense fourth step, right? And I did a good fourth step, and I thought I did a really wonderful one. I wouldn't have any resentments going back. I've been recording myself and practicing and listening. And I'm like, that's a resentment. That's a resentment. That's a resentment. My gosh, was my fourth step just a waste? But no, it wasn't. It was practice. And now I get to know what a resentment is, stuff that I need to accept and stuff that I need to just get out of my chest on an angry letter. Those three things really helped me out. But right from the get-go, my mom, my brother were against me. My dad, you know, couldn't help me. Like, it was just play with Anthony, right? So before I was five, I don't know what happened. No one's going to tell me the truth, and I don't want to go and hash it out with my mom or dad because we have a good relationship now. But something happened to me. I got struck on the head, traumatic injury. My doctors informed me about this. The shock wave went through my head into the back of my spine, popping out two bones, into the top of my back, popping out four bones, into the base of my spine, popping out three bones, onto my hip, popping the right hip down about 2 inches, or two centimeters, whatever, two something. It's not what it was, and it went all the way down my leg. Now, my grandmother saw me walking funny one day, and so I went to the doctors, and I got some special shoes. Oh my gosh, and my friends heard I had special shoes. It was Forrest Gump jokes from here till kingdom come, right? And I don't laugh at that stuff. It hurts, right? I laugh just because I want to continue being friends. I don't care, you know, if somebody's making fun of me or not. I want friends. I need people around me. So I give in this way. But there's resentment towards my mom, my dad, and my brother. My mom and my brother were against me. They have a special relationship, right? I think, not thinking back about it, I mean, it only makes sense. He's her first, and at 15, there's a strong bond, right? So I'm trying to have understanding as I go back and look at all this stuff so I don't get too upset about it. If I have a little bit of understanding, I can understand that my brother was being tortured by his cousins. They were burning him and stabbing him and electrocuting him and all this stuff, trying to drown him. So when we get a new puppy and he paralyzes this thing and then tells my mom that I did it, and I get to take the blame, right? And the punishment is hold this thing all the way to the vet so we can put it down while I'm getting belittled, right? My mom has a good relationship with him. He's trying to stay out of trouble. He's getting into all kinds of other trouble, but I got to eat it, right? So they're not with me. That dissolves, and I go to my next phase, right? 5-10. I live with my grandmother for a while. She's Quaker. She tries to teach me about God. She reads me the King James Bible and puts me to sleep with all the baguettes and all this stuff. Oh, my God. Oh, we go to church 3-4 times a week. I learn discipline from her. I learn good work habits and whatnot. So there's some positive stuff going on there. But then, you know, I move back in with my mom, and she's got a new guy. Right, and my brother's there half the time. We have different dads. I don't have a full brother. I have 5 brothers. None of them are full brothers. They're all half brothers or step. So it gets worse. Now I'm having fun every now and then. All right, fun is my get down. When life's bad, I go and I play. I know how to play with my toys. I'm a latchkey kid. Like I walk myself to kindergarten, first grade, second grade. You know, just follow the line of kids. And you know, try not to lose your key. I always lost my key. It taught me how to break into my house, which taught me how to break into everybody else's house that was built in the 60s. I learned how to steal I lived on Orange Street, so I stole from Boone Street Market. I got kicked out of there when I was in kindergarten. First store to kick me out for stealing. And then we had to go over to the deli a couple, you know, more blocks away. But I didn't like life. I didn't like school. I didn't like anybody. I was friends only with the outcasts. And you know, foster kids and other kids that were punished harshly. Right. And it's a mental health thing, but whenever I was punished, my mom would belittle me. There was a physical pain, lashes, bruises, whatever, and then set into isolation, more belittling, and I have to stare at something until I can get up, until I'm told I can get up. Now, it was really harsh, and I continue this behavior to this day, and I'm still working with my therapist on trying to get over it. But I'm an alcoholic, and we're in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And, okay, so by the time I'm 9... I have over a dozen suicide attempts by knives, by trying to drown myself, by trying to hang myself and all this. I know how to roll my own cigarettes with Bible paper. I know how to grab all the empty beer cans and make a one can of beer and I can get a nice buzz. Or if I can't find that, I know how to take a cigarette butt out and I can stomach drinking a beer with the cigarette in it. And I'm not hanging out with anybody. I'm just hanging out with myself. I'm watching TV in my room. I'm watching Nick at Night all night. Because they don't have too many jokes on Dragnet. It's all dry. It's all dry stuff. And that's my get down. I don't laugh too much. Stuff's pretty serious. The DARE program came around and told me where I can get drugs and what drugs do. Apparently, it went around and it helped other people stay away from drugs. It did the opposite thing for me. It told me who has drugs. I'm like, marijuana. I know Carlos. You know, acid. I know Kevin. All this stuff. I wouldn't find it until my teens. So let's get to my teens because I don't like my childhood. 13 to 15, I added cannabis into my life. Right, and everything's working. I'm not trying to kill myself anymore. I'm more happy than I've ever been. You know, as long as I have my stuff, I'm good. You know, as long as I know people that have stuff, I'm good. Like, there's a safe place to go. Right, but I don't drink or use safely. I'm a little kid, you know, using all this stuff that is not safe. Right, and I got mental disorders on top of all this stuff. It's just a recipe for disaster. I got into dirt bike riding. Sand railing in the Pomo. My friend lived in the Pomo, and I got to live with him out there, and that was some of the happiest times of my life, riding dirt bikes, skateboarding, doing insane jumps. I didn't care about my life, so it was easy to ride my dirt bike. I had a little speedometer up there. I could go to 70 and hit a jump and just pray, right? And then I'd land and roll away, or I'd hit the ground and I'd break a rib, or I'd break a bone. I've broken so many bones. but if you can move it, it's not broken, was the joke for the longest time. I broke my ribs, and they're like, can you breathe? You're good. But did you die? You know, so I grew up pretty hard. Hold on back. I grew up in a martial arts house. My mom found a guy that taught judo. So I learned judo for 9 years. That's my base. And I could, that was another thing that was positive in my life. I could just get into martial arts and I'd be all right. So what happened? I started running away. I started getting friends that I identified with, that accepted me for who I was and wouldn't talk smack about me behind me. They'd talk it to my face and I could talk it back. I learned how to talk the talk, right? And I developed some thicker skin. And I was a part of something now, right? I'm in high school and I'm a skater. I'm hanging out in Santa Maria right there on the corner. I go across the street and smoke, and I get introduced to speed. So I'm using cannabis, I'm using speed, and I'm drinking. But drinking's really where it's at. All that other stuff is just icing on the cake. I need a good fat buzz to make me feel better. I need the burn. You know, I need to feel the adrenaline rush of stealing the stuff, because now I'm stealing it from. Lucky over there on Alvin, right? And I'm good at it. I learned how to steal. They can't get me. but I did learn how to choose my spots. When a spot became too hot, I'd go to another spot. This is how it's done. This is how life is. And I told my friends, don't go there. They got my picture. They had my picture up on the wall. I became famous. But you can't see my eyes, you can't see my nose or anything. It wasn't crooked yet. I hadn't met Northwest yet. Northwest hooked it up. It was also weird because I'd buy my stuff from a baby. It was the strangest deal. Anyway, so I started running away, like I was beginning to say. Just for a couple days. And I wasn't trying to run away. I just couldn't go home because I was still really drunk. And we had a lot more beer to drink. And people just kept going on beer runs. And so eventually I had to go home because I wanted a shower and I wanted new clothes. And I had some stuff there that I wanted to get. Not my family. I didn't want to see my family. I knew how to break in, right? So I could break into my room whenever I wanted to, get in there, have a good night's sleep, shower, change my clothes, and I could take off and do it again. I'd stay at my friend's house, and we'd meet at school. It's not like I wasn't going to school. I was going to school all the time. I just didn't want to stay home. And my mom and my brother are still against me. My mom's got her addiction. My brother's got his. My brother liked PCP and burning me with hot knives and whatnot, pain tests. So yeah, my friends would come in the middle of the night and knock on my window, and they'd have a 30-pack already and some hard stuff, and we'd go, and this is all fun stuff. We'd go and sit in the hot tub and drink all this, you know, dehydration and alcohol, and it gets it started. And then I'd find out that I was locked out of the house. I wasn't able to get back in, so I'd have to sleep in the hot tub halfway out. My brother or my mom would find me with all these beer cans swirling around, or a 40s. I found out if you finish a 40, you can bounce it off the bottom of the hot tub and it'd come back up. It was great fun. Great fun. Until it breaks, and then you got to get all of the glass out of there. But we had a good time. We'd ditch school and we'd go to the tide pools and we'd find all these creatures. My friend was great at catching all this stuff, octopus and fish and eels and whatnot. We'd bring them back, throw them in the pool, swim around with them and whatnot. And then we'd litter the area with their corpses. It was a lot of fun. And then I just, you know what? I turned 17 and I'm like, why am I even going home? I need this. I got couches. I got endless friends that will let me sleep on their couches. So I just ran away. I took off. I didn't know that my mom had been, while I was 16, or in 17 too, I didn't know that she was calling the cops and had me declared missing. I always wondered if there was a milk carton with my face on it. That'd be kind of cool to have. I was good at running from the cops. I thought it was fun. I could jump a fence and jump onto someone's roof and get out of there quick. I could hide under a book. I'd hide under something and I'd watch them go by, get up and run the other way. Oh my gosh. It was great fun. Great fun. Especially on speed while you're drunk. All that paranoia, every single car is a cop car. There's other people hiding in the bushes with me. The shadow people, they're there. They're there. Don't go yet. Don't go yet. All right, go. No crawling out. I slept behind dumpsters and I ate out of the dumpsters. I liked sleeping behind Straw Hat pizzas. They'd have pizza parties and they'd throw away almost whole pizzas. And I could eat a pizza in the morning or at night or whatever. The donut shop would have fresh donuts that they would throw out at the end of the day so I could have my donuts and pizza. And I knew how to drink my water out of sprinkler systems. Mm-hmm. You take the cap off and drink the water out. Oh my gosh. Survival. You know, I lived out in the riverbed for a while. Made my own fort out there. Someone else made a fort out there at one time, and it was a three-story treehouse. There was, on the first floor, there was a fire pit, so you could sit there and whatnot. There was a third story. You could sit and look at the stars. It was freedom. It was freedom at its finest. I was a wild man. I used to call myself Chief Thunder when I was really messed up. Yeah. Oh my gosh, when do I get sober? Oh, let's lay it back. So I lived at a flop house. It was great. People could just come over and parties would start at random. We didn't know what type of drug, and that was my favorite thing. Just put it in my hand and I'll take it. What was it? Oh, don't tell me. I don't want to know. I felt like Chong. I loved Chong. I don't know if you don't tell me. Oh my gosh. And, oh my gosh, there's so many wonderful stories from there, but it was a messed up relationship. All the girlfriends that I had, the people that I hung out with, frivolous. I want to be nice, but they were, no one stayed with any one person. It was like everybody just mingled around. And some of my friends operated outside of the law, so I'd be like, where's my girl at? Oh, I'm pipping her out from my house. Really? She's like that? Yeah. Oh, well, thanks for telling me. That's the type of relationships I have. And then I can go off and I don't have to worry about that. She's out there doing something with someone else. There's always someone else. I just have to wait and someone else will come along. I don't have to worry about any of that. So a little bit of hard feelings, but not too much. Like, what could have been is the biggest. But at that flop house, one of my roommates decided an undercover cop should live with us. I told him not to because he kept asking these stupid questions. And I'm like, that's a cop question. No. And he was good. He got everybody that stayed arrested. And I left. I saw the signs. I told my friends. I'm like, I'm out of here. And I left. You know. I had odd jobs. I worked at Hollywood Video. I worked at Paco's doing dishes. I worked at the Apple Farm as a houseman. I got fired from all of these because of drug use. I worked at the California Conservation Corps. I got fired from that one for failing. I had five different illegal substances in my body when I failed that your analysis. That's a badge of honor. I still feel proud about that. And I've had seizures from drinking too much, and I've gone to the bathroom on myself with this, and I have taken my punches. When this happens, you are supposed to be ripped from your clothes and have obscenities drawn all over you. I don't care how messed up you are. I don't care what's coming out of your body. You are getting the shaft. That's just the way it is. That's just the way life is. This is normal stuff. People pass out at my house by the bathroom. Don't ever pass out in the bathroom. I'm going to pee pie your face. And I'm swerving, so. Anyway, I joined the army to get away from all this stuff, to get some discipline and whatnot. And I joined the infantry right out the gate. I wanted war. I wanted to go die in combat. At least then I could bring some honor to my name, to my house, and people won't go, well, they're just another junkie that died on the street. But I never got it. I trained my butt off. I graduated top of my class in basic training, drunk. I was completely drunk. They let me go for... I need accountability. And I need to get sober here soon, too. Saw a lot of death and destruction over there. And I don't want to get sucked into that pitfall. But it was the first one was a tank with five people in a tower with RPGs, and it lit me up. It was the best thing I had seen ever. I completely loved all the destruction and whatnot. I was a 50 cal gunner. I was a tow missile. I was anti-tank platoon company actually. And we did route recon and route clearance. You name it, we could do it in a truck. We escorted General Petraeus around. He got to sit on the back of my truck, smoking a cigar, calling out shots, looking at what I'm doing. And it was wonderful. It was so wonderful. But, I had this drinking problem, and I had this using problem, and I get in trouble, and it just gets bad. It gets bad there. And Sergeant Major says, "You're no longer fit for duty. Get out of my army." Oh, hit me right in the heart. This was my home. These were my people. But I couldn't be a part of them because I drank too much. I used too much. So I got to find someplace else to go. I got married between deployments. And I'll just go there real quick, see if I can get out of it. When on my second deployment, I left. I had a pregnant wife at home. During the deployment, I found out she was sleeping with a tattoo artist, and I had gotten in trouble, so I'm stuck on the base. So my favorite thing to do is to wake up, come to after being drunk, go through my day, and I'd stop past the medic tent. I'd watch the enemy POW, or the enemies that we got that were wounded. I'd watch a couple of them die. I'd go eat some food, come back, see there any more that were dying. And then I'd go back to my job. I'd do my job. And then I'd go back to my chew. I'd drink a bunch of scotch. I'd take a bunch what was it? Xanax. It was like Valium. Thank you. That's Xanax's brother or twin sister or something. And I would go to sleep. I learned how to make my M4 an automatic weapon with some quarters. And I would go to sleep with 30 rounds pointed at my face and my finger on the trigger, weapon off safe. And I did that for weeks, felt like months, until I lost my sergeant stripes and I got put back on the 50 cal where I belong. And then I stopped the drinking. I stopped all that stuff. And I had a purpose again. I got kicked out of the army, like I said. Well, I was locked into this marriage. I couldn't get out. I'm ride or die. I will forgive anybody for anything, even if I see it, and I have. And it got bad. Evictions, cars gone, all that stuff. So let me get sober, because that's a bad spot for me. February 16th, 2017 is my sobriety date. I wake up at the Champion Center in Lompoc. It's this hospital, and I go through about 3 weeks of seizing and shaking because I'm also addicted to opiates and meth, and I've used a lot of acid and ecstasy and anything I can get my hands on and put in my body to get this thing to shut up, because I've had suicide attempts. I've been on the psych ward so many times. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. I was tired of this life. So when I went to rehab, it was my choice. I went to the VA, asked for help. They told me to go there. I woke up there. I got nursed back to health. And I met a guy named Brett that has this just wonderful smile. And I've never seen anybody smile like this before, or laugh, or any, like, you know, for the longest time. And he gave me hope. He told me that somebody there had a resentment against him because he smiled so much. Right? No, he gave me hope. He gave me hope. I saw myself in this guy. And I was like, if this guy can be happy, especially around a bunch of pissed off people in rehab, like, there's got to be something to this Alcoholics Anonymous thing. Like, what do I do? And a panel came in, Nate Dogg, Lee, Kevin G., and maybe a couple others, I can't remember, came in, and I knew I needed a sponsor. I knew I needed to do this stuff, right? I did 1, 2, and 3 there. The first one, I had got to admit to myself that I'm an alcoholic and that my life is unmanageable, right? Well, all I got to do is think back to my drinking, and I don't have to think about too many times before I go, yeah, I do not safely drink, and then I form a habit, and I can't stop it. And I lose all kinds of control. I lose all kinds of power. I lose faith in everything, and I'm just done. My problems pile up, and I can't do anything about it besides drink and use, and that doesn't solve anything. So now what do I do since I can't drink and use? And that, because that's not solving anything anymore. It's no longer happy. He said a program of action, spirituality, will help. And I knew my life was unmanageable. Right? I've been evicted so many times, been on the psych, like, it was a no-brainer. Yeah, my life is unmanageable. But it's also unmanageable without alcohol. It's unmanageable with alcohol and without. Right? You take the alcohol away, and I'm still a messed up dude. I got resentments that I'm going to get, like, every second. I don't want to be here. I want to be there. I got a resentment against myself for not being there. And once I get there, why did I go there? I needed to be over where I was. Like, I didn't feel comfortable in my skin. That guy Brett helped me come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It was a group of drunks. It was the great outdoors. That's my God. The God that I grew up with my grandmother was going to send me and everybody to hell. We are all going to hell, according to all of that. And I'm glad that With the third step, when I turned my will and care over to a power greater than myself, it doesn't have to be that one, because that one didn't like me. So this new one that I got does like me, and it doesn't want me to hurt myself, and it doesn't want me to hurt anybody else. And I just have to continue looking for whatever that is. And as long as I'm looking for it, I will find it. And then all of a sudden, you know, if you knock, the door will open, makes sense. Oh, all right. Because for years I've read these passages, and it just didn't make any sense to me. Never. You know. So I got out of rehab, and I cornered Kevin G over here, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and somebody said, sure, he'd love to be your sponsor. He's like, oh. He was going through something. He was going through something serious. And he agreed. Said do 90 meetings in 90 days, and I was coming here in the morning. I was having a meeting, and then I was driving to the Champion Center to volunteer there, because this is the only place where I feel comfortable in a meeting at that Champion Center. I can't go back home. I can see all the burn holes in the walls, and it's a horror show back home. So I just need to be out and doing stuff. And plus, it feels good to be around people that understand. So it was easy to do 90. I did like 20. I did so many. And it was just so get used to everything. Get used to being out. I got severe PTSD, like I said. I would go shopping and leave my entire cart because I have this thing where if I hear something, I will see people die in front of me and drop to the ground. And it just it is jarring. So I just leave. That hasn't happened in the longest time after doing all this stuff. It's amazing. And then he walked me all the way to 11 and pushed me into 12 the best that he could. You know, and that four step, just getting the name down, just put stuff down, continue writing. I pushed myself each day to just do a little bit more, and after a month and a half, I had it down. I had a list that I could say to somebody, and I'd practiced saying it to him so many times. I don't really want to say any of this. And nervous to do the fifth step and then saying all of it. He's got many stories to express the same type of deal. I'm like, oh, you've been through something similar like this. I'm not alone. One by one by one, page after page after page, I felt more part of, more comfortable, less shaky, more accepting of what I've been through. On 6, I went out to Point Sal and I walked around and I tried to see if there was anything else that I wanted to get rid of. I couldn't find anything. I didn't want to find anything. I was done. It wasn't until like doing stuff like this that other stuff pops up. Like, oh yeah, this. Oh yeah, this. But all the big stuff was good. All the big stuff was good. Oh yeah, with the 3, I memorized it. I put it in my head and said it every day. Until it trickled down into my heart. Now I can say it and feel it when I pause and do it right. Sometimes when I'm on the run, I'll say it. I don't really feel it, but it's there. It's there. You know, and you get what you put in. Right? Got to 7 and I did the same thing. I memorized the prayer. 8 and 9. Redoubling effort. I had to write down everybody that I hurt without provocation, and do my best to make amends to all of it. That was a great feeling to go through all that. Make sure you go through it with the sponsor who helps you out. Make a plan to for each of these individual things. Otherwise, you can get into some mess, and then you have to do some more damage control stuff. But 9 was fun. Now I live in 10, 11, and 12. Whenever something is in my head for 3 days, I know I have something to write down and bring to my sponsor. Right? And I write AA stuff down in AA format and bring it to my sponsor. And I write my mental health stuff down in therapy format and I bring it to my therapist. Right. I was on 9 different psych meds, and my psychologist got me down to 2, and I leave that over in the psychology world. So I look for these things. How do I say it? We grow at the speed of pain comes to mind, right? So it's been going around my head. The first day I could have noticed it and wrote it down, right? But I have to got to wait 2, 3, 4 days sometimes before I'm really, really upset at this one thing. And then I have to write it down. An inventory or an angry letter or something. I got to write it down and talk about it. Expose it. It's very cathartic. Healing. I learned cathartic last year. Thank you. I've been using it as much as I can. I don't know a lot of these words. Anonymity? Come on. I tripped over anonymity so many times. Oh, 11. 11's fun. I got my prayers. I added the St. Francis prayer. I memorized it, and then I do my best to say it from the heart. And that really helps. My meditation, I picked Tai Chi, I picked Qigong meditations where either I'm moving or I'm not moving, but I have to give my mind something to focus on in order to meditate. My mind just doesn't shut up. It's been evolving for so many years. I want to use it well. So I give it something to do. Today I had so much anxiety. I had to use all my faculties in order to remain calm. I went to the gym and I did my Qigong meditation. I did my sword meditation. I got into martial arts and I got my third degree black belt with close quarters combat and kinjutsu and whatnot. It's just a certificate. I just continue training, continue moving, and I don't become stagnant. I don't become stale, and I continue growing. With 12, I am open to work with anybody. I do have a problem with people. I have problems trusting people. I think you're going to try to fight me, stab me, you know, and so I keep my distance. But not too much. Not too much. I need to be helping people as much as I can. So I'm open to that now, which my first sponsor, Kevin, was trying to get me to understand, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to. like I said, Lee's my new sponsor, and he's pushing me again to find somebody new. But that's the stuff that keeps me sober. 1 through 12, and then the traditions, and then I want to learn the concepts as well. I'm getting into service helps. I secretary meditation meeting on Monday. I pour coffee on Tuesday for the book study. I have a setup commitment at the factory on Wednesday. I just like going to the stag meeting on Thursday. And then on Saturday, every second Saturday, I have the can commitment there. And then I'm getting into Roundup, right? I did that last year, and I want more of it, so I'm doing it again. These things help me stay sober. Thank you very much.
Let's give him another round. That was